Okay, we're going to start our conversation now, and our guest in Bishkek will join us in just a couple of minutes. We're recording this as a podcast. And today we're going to be talking about the results of the referendum in Kyrgyzstan. It was Sunday, the referendum, a constitutional referendum, the seventh referendum in 24 years of independence in Kyrgyzstan, and people had the opportunity to vote on a slate of 26 proposed amendments to the Constitution that involved government structure, government powers, and also a series of other social and other issues would be reflected in constitutional changes. So with us today are Venera Jumatayeva, Director of our Kyrgyz Service, and Bruce Panier, Senior Correspondent from the Central Newsroom and one of our specialists on Central Asia. And we will be joined soon by Emil Jurayev from Bishkek, and I'll introduce him when he comes on. So Venera, do you want to start and talk a little bit about this referendum and what the results mean at this point?
Yeah, I will try to give you a little bit of background and what was happening in President Atambayev's mind when he decided to hold this referendum, why and how. And my colleagues will give you more details about constitutional amendments. Kyrgyzstan, as many of you know, is a very unique country in many ways. It has its fourth president, 29th prime minister, and hi, Emil.
Hi, this is Emil Jurayev, associate professor, international and comparative politics in the American University in Central Asia, who's with us from Bishkek. Welcome.
Thank
yeah.
you.
I just started, Emil, trying to give a little bit of background of referendum. So Kyrgyzstan is a very unique country. It has its fourth president now and 29th prime minister, and it has no problem to declare that only 42% of eligible voters cast their ballots in the last referendum on Sunday. As many of you know, in other countries of Central Asia and Russia, presidents leave office only for one reason, for natural causes, and prime ministers don't change that often, and usually they announce turnout in referendums and elections as very high. It's not enough to change presidents and prime ministers for Kyrgyzstan, so we change constitution pretty often also. As Tom said, actually I have to correct, it was eighth referendum to amend the constitution in short history of Kyrgyzstan of 25 years of independence. And change can result in many positive steps very often. But as Kyrgyzstan's modern history shows, it also can show political inconsistency and lack of respect or denial of what has been achieved or what has been done before. Former presidents are blamed for all problems and troubles in Kyrgyzstan, not only in past, but for current problems also. So there is a bad tradition and bad habit in Kyrgyz politics to change constitution often, and President Atambayev fell into that tradition. First, he said in last November that the current constitution, I will say current constitution because new constitution is not valid yet, it will take a few weeks. So current constitution is very confused, combining science of a presidential and parliamentary system. And he said, we have to rewrite the constitution to make it a pure parliamentary system. Sounded good and promising, but when first original amendments appeared, became public, and they were offered for discussion in the parliament, majority of people, politicians, experts, journalists, were very disappointed because they were not the right moves to make Kyrgyzstan a pure parliamentary country, democracy. Rather, they were perceived as President Tambayev's attempt to secure his legacy and his political survival. So, but under huge pressure of the society, of civil society, which is another unique thing for Kyrgyzstan, those original amendments were changed. They kept changing them, and when official final amendments were published finally on the state newspaper, they were much less dramatic than they were in the original version. So in 2010, after very bloody revolution, as you know, the interim government members, including President Atambayev, and 75 intellectuals, academics, lawyers, experts, who established the Constitutional Council at that time, and they were trying to make, to transform Kyrgyzstan from presidential country to parliamentary country. They wrote a new constitution, and they announced, after everything was done, they announced that they agreed that this constitution cannot be changed until 2020. And people welcomed that decision because they were tired of those inconsistencies and instability. So this was biggest disappointment when Atambayev announced that he wants to rewrite the constitution. But talking about those amendments, the constitution must be a very general document reflecting some fundamental, foundational principles and regulations. But in these amendments, we can see some amendments which were dictated by some current issues, current problems in President Atambayev and his administration's mind. For instance, the current constitution says everyone shall have the right to apply to international human rights organizations in case their human rights and freedoms violated. And, attention, second sentence. And if international human rights body confirms such violations, then the Kyrgyz Republic shall take measures to restore them and to compensate damage. Very democratic passage. But this second sentence will be removed in the new constitution because United Nations Human Rights Committee ruled last March, that jailed human rights defender Azimjan Askarov's human rights and freedoms were violated by Kyrgyzstan. And his convictions should be annulled, and he should be immediately released from prison. Official Bishkek's response was, what? How come? Kyrgyzstan is a sovereign country, and nobody can dictate us what to do with this or that case. And President Atambayev said, we will change the constitution. So this is one situational reason for those amendments, which shouldn't be. We cannot change for every situation constitution, obviously. So this was one reason. And now this, as I said, very democratic passage will be removed from the new constitution, and we don't know what kind of a future you're expecting for Azimjan Askarov. He's still in jail. Second such situational amendment is related to Kumtor gold mine, the second largest gold mine in Central Asia, operated by Canadian Centerra Gold Corporation. Endless disputes around Kumtor gold mine pushed Kyrgyz authorities to revoke the statute of limitations for ecological crimes. And the last point I want to stop, the amendment about who can marry in Kyrgyzstan. In the new constitution, it is written that only a man and a woman can get married. In my personal opinion, this amendment was added just to pacify and please conservative part of the society and to attract them to vote in the referendum. Yes, if President Atambayev decides in the future to become a prime minister, his presidential term is ending next year, only single presidential term, another unique thing for Kyrgyzstan, for the region. So next year we have presidential election, and if he becomes in the future prime minister, or let's say his candidate will become prime minister, he or she will have more power than current prime minister has. But President Atambayev already said publicly a few times that he doesn't want to be prime minister. We never know what happens in Central Asia, and as I said, very unpredictable Kyrgyzstan. Maybe he will say one day, so my Social Democratic Party is insisting me to run for prime minister's post, etc. So anyway,
people insist usually
now. No, in Kyrgyzstan it's a party should nominate, or faction. So or coalition. But I personally hope that President Atambayev will not try to squeeze all power in his hands. I think this scenario is impossible in Kyrgyzstan. So I guess if I would be judging, and I have to say, in my personal opinion, Kyrgyzstan made one step forward, but two steps backwards with this referendum. Thank you.
All right, Bruce, I'd like to hear your thoughts. First, I just want to make sure, Emil, you're able to hear us okay, right?
Yes, I hear you.
Okay, we'll come to you in a second then. Bruce, do you want to talk about what stands out in this referendum in your mind? And maybe you can make reference to the fact, if I understand it correctly, that people had to vote yes or no on all the amendments. They didn't have a chance to pick to vote for some and against others. Do you see any significance in that? But talk more generally about what you think.
Okay.
Cheating, that was not a referendum.
That's pretty standard for any Central Asian referendum, actually, is that it's a yes or no vote. So no matter who you are in society, I'll start with that,
The referendum has to have a simple question with yes or no answer. And if you put 26 questions in a page, and you ask to be yes or no, I can be angry with 13 and against 13 others. So yes or no to 26 questions, if that's honest, should have 26 answers. If not, that's a cheating.
Like, are you Muslim? And do you like President someone? Yes or yes?
Don't get me wrong, I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying that in Central Asia, traditionally, and it's not just Kyrgyzstan, it's everywhere, that you do get these packages. And they're designed exactly for the reasons you were just saying. There's something in all these referendums that will appeal to everybody on some level, one or two things that they like, even if they don't like some of the other stuff. There's something they'll say yes to. And so when it comes down to it, all you can do is say, I approve the whole package, or I disagree with the whole package, and that's it. But just because there's something in there for everybody, almost every, without exception, they usually pass. This was actually low. I think only 80% of the people approved this one, but it's usually more like 90 in these things. So you're absolutely correct. It would be more fair if you could pick individual issues and say yes or no, but it's never been like that at all. I'm actually going to start by going back to last year real quick, because this is what the referendum, the significance of this for me. Last year, some of you know, I did tour Kyrgyzstan for the parliamentary campaign, and thanks to the financial generosity of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, I was able to spend nearly 3 weeks traveling 3,000 kilometers around Kyrgyzstan to observe how the campaign was going in different parts, and it was a beautiful campaign. Even if the elections had problems, the campaign was fantastic. But what struck me, and what I heard more than several times, was that people kept saying, Atambayev will do something before the presidential election. We don't know what that is, but he's going to do something to make sure he secures his place somehow or another, extend his term, something. They didn't know what it would be, but they were sure that some dirty trick would be played before we actually got the presidential election. So now we have this referendum. 42% of the people voted for it, but actually out of 2.8 million eligible voters, only about 1.1 million actually went and cast ballots on election day. So that's already, we got less than half of the people who could have participated that actually did. And of the people that did participate, thanks to the work of Radio Azatik, we know that most of them did not know exactly what was on the referendum to begin with. They just came and voted yes.
In general, how many people read constitutions?
Right, and Venera gave me a copy of it, and I understand, because I did read the Constitution and the parts that were going to be changed, and it took a long time, and it was not exciting and fun work to do, so I can sympathize with the people out there. Now, it wasn't supposed to, as Venera said, it wasn't supposed to be changed at all until 2020. That was actually written into the Constitution in 2010. There was wide agreement in Kyrgyzstan amongst the majority of the politicians, people that were familiar with the Constitution, that it did need to have amendments to it sometime. The best argument I heard about that was, look, we didn't have any experience with parliamentary democracy, so we wrote a constitution, based on what we knew and with our best intentions to push forward this idea of a parliamentary democracy, but now we see there's some fine-tuning that needs to be done on it. I have no objection to the fact that they did do amendments before they were supposed to. I think it was just bad timing to do it before the presidential election. Because of all the doubts I heard last year, it seemed to confirm the fact that why are we amending the Constitution before the presidential election when there was all the suspicion about what Atambayev's motives were coming into next year. And we saw that the referendum was already a divisive issue early on. The reason the ruling coalition split at the end of October was largely because of these arguments over how the Constitution should read. So it already disrupted what had been a fairly stable coalition government. The prime minister was reappointed, so I suppose that was one plus on that. But in the meantime, you could see even in Parliament that this was a divisive issue, and they weren't sure how they were supposed to treat this, and it caused a lot of problems. It also caused problems between the people who were the, for lack of a better word, heroes of the 2010 revolution. There was people like Omerbek Tekibayev from the Atamakan Party, Rosa Otunbayeva, who became president, is now the former president of Kyrgyzstan, and Almazbek Atambayev, who is the president right now. They were all allies at this time, and that split them apart because of the referendum. So these were people who were supposedly leading the country out of this presidential system that was so disadvantageous to Kyrgyzstan for all these years. And the issue of the referendum actually caused them to not only be divided, but I mean public displays of clear opposition to different points of view on this, insulting. They raised all kinds of the specter of legal suits against each other for this thing. So now they voted in. Okay, the referendum was approved. That was a given. We figured that was going to happen from the start. But it's not over. Not many people, like I said, understood the referendum fine, but next year we have presidential elections, as Venera pointed out, and this is bound to be an issue in presidential elections. We already see it shaping up like that, too. There's these perennial issues in Kyrgyzstan that opposition groups can always use to put forth their claim that they would be a better choice than the person or people who are in power, corruption, poverty, things like that. Now we have another issue added to the whole pile of what the opposition is going to be able to use against the president, the current president, and his party, the Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan, which is the majority, has the most seats anyway in parliament of any other party. So going into next year, we've actually thrown a little more fuel on what's bound to be a fire anyway, and it's going to be a huge problem coming into this. Atambayev, it's expected that, I agree that he said that he wouldn't run for, obviously he can't run for president, and he didn't want to be prime minister of the country. But there are suspicions that he wants his party to be the dominant party in parliament, and someone from his party will become the president of the country. So this referendum issue, because so few people knew what was in there, is going to be, if someone from the opposition comes forward and says, it's an unfair race because of the referendum, and it gave advantage to the Social Democratic Party of Kyrgyzstan, which is Atambayev's party ultimately. Then it's just going to be one more thing that the opposition casts on. This is not a free and fair poll. We don't have an equal opportunity to get our guy in as president. And really, the whole thing is kind of strange to begin with because it is a parliamentary system. So when they started talking about, well, we're going to give more power to the prime minister, actually, under a parliamentary system, the prime minister should have been the guy with all the power anyway. So now they've had to, there were a few changes. And really, if you look, again, if you look at what the changes are in the Constitution, they didn't give the Prime Minister that much more power. He already, in theory, had all the power. A few things to appoint local head chiefs and also the fact that if the Prime Minister was sacked or dismissed because the coalition had fallen apart, he would keep his seat in Parliament, which has not always been true, so that he would still be a member of Parliament, a legislator, a lawmaker, even if he wasn't Prime Minister anymore. He wouldn't just leave Parliament right away. But that's it. I mean, it wasn't a really huge change or anything like that. And like I said,
isn't the Prime Minister empowered now to oversee the military and the police?
Right. Is one of the changes that he gets that. But, so that did tighten up his position a little bit. It should have been included probably in the original version of the Constitution from 2010. It wasn't. And then what we've seen since the 2010 Constitution was passed is although in theory, Kyrgyzstan is a parliamentary democracy. When you look at the news of who's making the calls and the decisions in the government, invariably you come back to Almazbek Atambayev again and again and again. This is not right. I mean, this should have been the prime minister that was making these calls all the time. But the prime minister actually gets very, very little publicity for what he does. And to give you an example of how damaging that is, when they hold CIS summits, for instance, Putin invites Almazbek Atambayev as the president. Now the prime minister will go to the meetings that Medvedev and other people that are the heads of the government attend, but really actually the head of state is the prime minister, and he should be the one going to the CIS summit. But this shows that Putin and other CIS leaders don't recognize the prime minister as actually being the head of the government in Kyrgyzstan, which suits them very well. Certainly in Central Asia, the idea of parliamentary democracy is not very popular. It's never been supported by the neighbors at all. They don't want that. They're strong presidents. They would prefer not to have this system succeed in Kyrgyzstan. So this is what we got going into, like I said, going into next year's election, tentatively scheduled, I believe, for late October next year. That this is going to be one of the issues that's going to come back to haunt the campaign. And as anyone familiar with Kyrgyz history will know, elections can be extremely volatile and contentious in Kyrgyzstan. There's been not only has it produced the revolution of 2005, but even in, I suppose, arguably tamer days of earlier times, elections were very chaotic events. People, lawsuits filed everywhere. People put in opponents, oppositions like Felix Kulov from Arna Mist, put in jail. And so now I just see that if they had waited to do this referendum until after the presidential election, it would have made a lot more sense. By holding it before the presidential election, this is going to be an issue, and it's going to be a problem coming into presidential elections, which really shouldn't have much significance anyway, but are going to have a lot of significance, because no matter what it says in the Constitution, the president still is seen by a lot of people inside and outside Kyrgyzstan as actually being the head of state.
All right, let's turn then to Emil Jurayev, live from Bishkek. Tell us your views.
Yes. Do you all hear me well?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Excellent. All right, well, a number of very important and perhaps most important things have been already mentioned by both Venera and Bruce. But let me add a few things here. So some of the remarkable things about what took place last week is obviously, this weekend, is obviously the very low turnout. In Kyrgyzstan, at least here, one of the remarkable things has been this only 42%. Just imagine that if you were to run this referendum by the previous version of the law on referendum, it would not have passed because it required at least 50% turnout. So we basically pushed it through, and the bar was 30%, and so it took place because of the new referendum law, which, as you all know, was adopted in a very rapid, rushed way, along with the law announcing the referendum on the Constitution. Now, I want to ask. Pose the question of why did we end up having the referendum that we did, considering that Kyrgyzstan has had too many of them. We should be tired. Since 2010, we claim to be building something else. So we should have less interest in so readily and easily going into the same tracks again, and so on and so forth, right? But so I think there were at least three conditions that made it so easy to go to announce and hold this referendum. One was very importantly that the 2010 constitution had been discredited quite systematically for all these 14 years, and that's a very sad thing because there is no perfect constitution. No constitution will work just fine from the time it's adopted. But the range of critics of the constitution was vast. Basically, it was very difficult to find anyone who did not criticize the constitution as being raw, as being contradictory, as leaving too many loopholes, and so on and so forth, including Mr. Omurbek Tekebayev, who is dubbed as the father of the 2010 constitution. He was one of the initiators of another failed attempt to introduce GIST in 2014. It included a very prominent lawyer, soon to become non-deputy again, Chopon Jakubova. It included pretty much everyone else as well. And so the constitution was already so much criticized that the people were mentally, psychologically prepared already for introduction of changes before 2020. So despite all of these valiant attempts by a number of prominent politicians and civic activists in the fall, late summer and most of the fall of this year, it was ultimately quite difficult to stop the train, the motion that the government had launched. Secondly, I think another thing that made it so easy to go for this referendum is that we had we continue to have very weak political parties, very fluid party lines, and therefore a very easy way for the government, President Atambayev, to construct an impressive majority of the parliament who supported the need to change the constitution and to call for a referendum. As you might remember, it was about 90 people had signed, or more, even more than that, had signed an initial call for a referendum, which obviously had been questioned for all sorts of legal breaches and ability based on the existing law. But the fact that such a great majority of the sitting parliaments had supported it made it a little disheartening for the opposition, for the for those who did not think the referendum was a legal to vote for. Now that is very that fluidity of party lines could be seen very easily as toward the late part run towards the referendum when. For example, the leader of the Kyrgyzstan political fraction in the parliament started to backstep. At one point, he was the main speaker for the referendum. Soon, he turned around. He said, "We should not be as deputies. We should not be forced, and our hands should not be twisted to support the referendum and things like that." Same thing turnaround happened with ODIHR, pro-political party. And withdrew their support toward the end. So you can see that the political party, the weakness of the institutions of political parties was one main condition for all this rather dubious sort of referendum. And lastly, I think very importantly, even though Kyrgyzstan has seen now the fourth president, we have not yet really seen a comforting good example of an ex-presidency. Two presidents are not very comfortable in their conditions nowadays, and one president was elected in an ordinary way, and her legitimacy was was undermined by the current president himself just the other day, just 2 months ago. So, for President Atambayev to imagine his post-presidential life, obviously, it must be a very interesting idea to completely leave the scene and leave it for whatever fate has to be for him. So, all of these conditions, I think, of course, there were many others, I suppose, but these were, I think, some of the important reasons why it was a relatively easy and acceptable thing for this constitutional change to take place. Now, in the end, what do we gain by these changes? Of course, we could go on for quite a bit in terms of the very specific details of about 30 different changes in the constitution. And it is, of course, not a surprising thing that people were asked to yes or no in a single mark for all of these very different sorts of changes. It would have been much more reasonable to ask people with that sort of a single answer if the question were, would you like us to go back and redraft the constitution? And then that would open the way for a new constitutional council to do the work. But obviously that's not the tradition in Central Asia. So what we do have now, I think, is one thing is the emerging sense of constancy or consistency of the constitution has been broken. Over 6 years of not changing the constitution was the longest that the president that Kyrgyzstan has had so far, and this has come to a sad, rather unfortunate end. So Kyrgyzstan yet again. I think the population in Kyrgyzstan has basically lost any belief that a constitution can last beyond a single presidential term. Secondly, I think more practically in politics, it opens a number of possibilities. One is the most obvious and rational thing for the incumbent political party to do is, of course, to look for ways to ascertain its comfort or even dominance in the coming years. And I think this constitution does open some of the ways, but without serious guarantees. So it would be a guaranteed, comfortable time for President Atambayev and his Social Democratic Party come 2017, end of 2017, if the parliament continues to be dominated by the Social Democratic Party in the ruling coalition, and if President Atambayev and his close allies somehow managed to get a likable, loyal, cooperative president to be elected. And if, barring that, this loyal presidency taking place, then making sure that a very strong and, again, loyal prime minister can last longer than just 1 year. Will also be installed in the parliament. Now, all of these are big ifs, and one thing that's been now discussed in Kyrgyzstan since the referendum already took place is whether Atambayev might still go for something that President Bakiyev did in his time, which is call for a snap, mature, pre-term parliamentary elections again, because the constitution has changed so much, and the parliament's powers, authorities have changed, have been revolved so much. Parliament's interaction with Prime Minister and the President have all changed very much. It does make sense for a new parliament to be called, to be elected, because this parliament did not get elected based on the new version of the constitution now. Now, obviously, there is a big risk with that as well for the Social Democratic Party, which is you call a snap election, you don't win a majority. And plus, of course, there are all sorts of popular unacceptance of such a move that might require further troubles. So, all of these said, I think what President Atambayev will try to do, given the new powers according to the Constitution now, is during this year to pack all of the power positions, small and large, with very loyal, social democratically aligned people, especially his judiciary, but also whatever is left in the executive has not touched yet. And then try very hard and work with the most electable, most likely presidential candidate to be also somebody who is very loyal and cooperative with President Ilham Aliyev.
All right, thank you, Emil. I'm just going to just check here.
Very big if and with very big uncertainties that President Nazarbayev should not be very now. Should not be feeling too comfortable about any of this.
All right, thanks. I want to check to see if there are any questions at this point in the room.
Some comments. Not questions, really. May I?
Yes, but just pull that microphone a little bit closer, just in case. Oh, there's one there. Okay, you're fine. You're fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Right after and before actually the referendum, that's okay.
It's okay.
Right after and even before the referendum, I had a lot of discussions and conversations with the Kyrgyz service, not only in my capacity as the regional director for Central Asia, but also out of my own interest and out of my own favoritism for Kyrgyzstan as a country. And nation. I think listening to all the critical points, what I have been hearing about the referendum and the Kyrgyz president and the Kyrgyz government and the Kyrgyz system and experience since 2005, at least, my recollection and my assumption from all these discussions is that, yes, the Kyrgyz people want to change to a different and better, more comfortable, more democratic-like of government. Yes, there are problems like what we said about how to consolidate the power of the ruling party or the president and so on. But no, this is not like what happened in Azerbaijan and Uzbekistan. That means if the constitution requires the Senate head to become the acting president and then go to elections, you just appoint yourself or change the constitution short before you
just
want
neglect
to
it.
Huh?
Or easily neglect
it. Or neglect it and pass a law and or referendum or whatever, and you decide that whoever wants to become the next president, a dentist in Turkmenistan, for example, yes, the next president should be a dentist, for example. That is passed. Referendum is passed, constitution is changed, and the person in question, Mr. President of Turkmenistan, the new whatever he is being called, Arkadagh, is the president. In Uzbekistan, for example, usually the Senate leader will become the acting president. No, they changed it. And
no, they didn't.
They didn't.
Don't change it. They just don't bother with it.
Yes.
Care about it.
That is my point. A few questions I have for Venera and other colleagues, Kubad is here too, was, okay, what is exactly the points in this set of changes that we object to? I frankly didn't hear much substance in these critical remarks, although I know it has changed in the process. Yes, there were mainly two questions raised. One was this supremacy of NGOs and foreign organizations. And second one was the marriage issue, that marriage could be done between men and women. And my point here, in defense of the Kyrgyz government, not government, but the way of political life in Kyrgyzstan, is that this is nothing very unusual. We have America, the United States, does not comply with the Hague court decisions on human rights. They don't. This is the supremacy of the local federal jurisdiction of the United States of America and many other countries. or marriage between between men and men, or women and women, or whatever, is not approved in all states of the U.S., or not even in the European Union, is not approved, even now. So we are comparing, criticizing this, and rightly we are taking issue with these things. We are comparing Kyrgyzstan with EU and U.S., not with Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan.
I think that's an important piece of context that we should have, and just before Venera starts, we should note that Kyrgyzstan, compared to the rest of Central Asia, is a much more open society where we can operate more freely than in many other places. And you know, we're not talking about another Turkmenistan here. It's a different context. But go ahead, Vinay.
Yeah, different country. Our expectations are much higher than in EU, maybe, because those people came. Those people took power after revolution. They promised to build a real democracy, and so I agree with Emil that there was understanding in the society that constitution written in 2010 had many, let's say, mistakes or some failures. Many things had to be fixed, but since in 2010, they agreed among all politicians that the constitution cannot be changed till 2020. Why there was a rush?
In a manner that
even in the parliament, they asked, who is the author of this amendment? And the presidential administration representative was naming different, we also call White House, the government house in Bishkek, because it's made out of white marble. And so he was naming different employees of the White House, like unknown people. It is clear that President Atambayev decided that agreement from 2010 was some naive gentleman's agreement, and he didn't want to follow that deal. But all this creates, as I said, a bad tradition, bad inconsistency in politics. And there is a need for changing the constitution. Why not to make in a way, as Emil offered, like he said, as it happened in 2010, establish constitutional council of professionals, lawyers, academics, and make them fix the constitution, but make public discussions and everything. So to make it, I mean, the best constitution for Kyrgyzstan, and so it shouldn't be changed again. When next president comes, there is no guarantee. He or she will want to change constitution again.
The question I have for Emil, if there is an agreement not to change until 2020, I guess this is a clause in the constitution itself.
They
kind of breached constitution to make an amendment into the same constitution. But what are these defense mechanisms for the future? I mean, did they set again another date for not changing, like for, or what? It was like a defense mechanism, one of those that did not work, obviously, in this case.
No, very good question, actually. So now, after this referendum, there is no defense mechanism. Because Article 114, which has been the main point of discussion between the opponents and proponents of the referendum, was that the way I read it, and most serious lawyers have read it, is that Article 114 clearly says that until 2020, there is no way this constitution can be changed. Now,
certain chapters.
Except for the closing chapter, which is about this constitution, and the first chapter, which is about the fundamentals of the country. But those who said it was possible to lead to change it argued that it was only a ban for the parliament to change it, but the people can. There's yet another way that the parliament cannot even initiate a referendum, call for a referendum. But only the people could call for a referendum. But obviously, there was no popular call for a referendum at this point. So anyway, every word and every comma and period in that article was turned upside down by so many different people, but the way was open. I think it was clear to anyone genuine enough to read that the spirit of that article and the Constitution was clear that until 2020 we commit not to change the Constitution the way we have changed it until then. Now, given the fact that we have found the loopholes enough to make the Constitution change possible this time, now I think, as I said earlier, if for 6 years we thought we probably will learn how to live by one Constitution for long enough, now I think that faith has been lost, and no other article or anything will be helpful anymore. But to the previous question about only two changes were mentioned, and why is everyone so adamant about the change? I think, well, one principal thing is that the very fact that constitutional change took place is one of the things that the critics are so disagreeing with. Now, there are many other things disagreeable in the actual changes to the constitution, including, for example, the possibility that a person could be deprived of her citizenship. That's now left to a constitutional law outside of the constitution, whereas previously it was an absolute categorical no, you cannot be deprived of your citizenship. Another is almost a third of the constitutional changes touch on the judiciary system, which in the end make the judiciary very dependent and open to influence by the president's office and the parliament. These are some of the issues that I think are very seriously toward democracy.
Other questions in the room?
I have just...
Yeah. Please. Yes, come up to the microphone so we can hear you on the podcast.
I think 2 months ago, Atambayev told that Putin and Nazarbayev asked him to stay for one more presidential term. And he answered that he can't do that because our people are different and they will not tolerate. So the question is that, is there any foreign influence on what is going on in Kyrgyzstan nowadays?
Bruce, you have any thoughts on that?
You know, if there is, I personally don't see it. I look at this as more Atambayev's personal initiative. I mean, he seems to be the driving force behind these changes. I didn't ever get the impression that there was someone outside the country that was pushing him or anybody else in Kyrgyzstan to make these changes. It seemed to be something that the president's office had cooked up and decided they were going to push forward.
It should come from somewhere or from the general atmosphere.
As I explained, the President Atambayev just the situations with Azim Jamaskarov, with Kumtor, and with other constitutional chamber made a decision that government employees cannot be charged by National Security Committee. And that outraged him, made him very angry. Such situational affairs pushed him to make changes. And of course, he heard many voices that there should be a rebalance of power. I mean, the prime minister became a very shy, very invisible person in Kyrgyzstan right now. Within this Atambayev's term, we have fifth prime minister right now. And they were all like very shy, very in shadow figures. And then he decided, okay, we will give a little bit more power to prime minister. That if he was sincere last November, and when he said we have to build a real parliamentary democracy in Kyrgyzstan, then he had to go much further in rebalancing the power. But they did just few very, very modest steps. And I think if Nazarbayev and Putin would advise him how to change the constitution, then we would see a completely different constitution now.
Well, let's just extend this discussion of Kyrgyzstan and other countries. On one level, Kyrgyzstan seems very interested in being really independent. They closed down the U.S. military use of the airfield there. Now Atambayev says that the Russians are going to have to stop having military installation there. How independent is Kyrgyzstan's foreign policy?
Certainly not as much as they wish. They were basically forced into the Eurasian Economic Union. They had almost no choice at all. They were being strangled by the rules of their neighbors. Of course, we knew that Kyrgyzstan is like a re-export economy for the most part. They buy stuff in China, they re-export it. But when Kazakhstan, their neighbor to the north, was since Kazakhstan was part of the Eurasian Economic Union, all of a sudden it cut off trade there. So Russia ended up getting more influence because they basically compelled Kyrgyzstan to join the Eurasian Economic Union, and so far the results have not been good. Trade has continued to fall, but even the military base there, that was an agreement that dates back to Akayev, and when Putin and Akayev agreed that there was going to put this military base on there. There was already the U.S. military base at Manas at the time, and they decided that the Russians wanted the Kant base. But the way the Russians phrase that is it's not a base to protect Kyrgyzstan so much as it's like a regional base. It's part of a chain that includes the bases in Tajikistan, for instance, too. But yeah, I mean, it certainly undercuts the sovereignty of Kyrgyzstan because they're not free to make a lot of decisions they wish. Like I said, economically, Russia's pressured them into joining the Eurasian Economic Union, so now they have to live by the regulations of that organization. Atambayev, for all his tough talk about we should close the Russian military base, that's after his term has expired. He was saying soon, I think by the middle of the next decade, but the chances that's going to happen are almost none, and it's open to renegotiation by a future administration, so I don't really see that. Within the country, for most of the domestic politics, Kyrgyzstan is free to dictate its own terms and make its own laws, but when push comes to shove, I think Russia's demonstrated again and again that they consider that part of their backyard, and Kyrgyzstan really didn't have very many options for allies, unfortunately. They're wary of the Chinese. They like the Chinese money, but they don't want too much Chinese influence. Russia is at least a country that they know. A lot of people still speak Russian. And, of course, Russian TV is available. So by itself, Kyrgyzstan would have a hard time standing up. They don't have the necessary resources to really make a go of it economically. They need an ally, someone who's going to help them out. And in this case, really the only country that fits that. Huh?
And that ally does not exist.
Well, the only country that even fits that profile is Russia at the moment. They're the only ones that are really going to help them out in terms of security.
What about China?
Well, China can help with some money, but like I said, especially since Kyrgyzstan actually borders China, they're really, like I said, apprehensive about getting too close to the Chinese. Like I said, the money, the investment, and certainly it's helped the country out in terms of infrastructure.
With other Central Asians.
Yeah, but some of them have a little more distance.
Emil, maybe can add something. It's his field.
Excuse me, we have another.
I think Bruce is saying pretty much I agree with everything you're saying. I think Kyrgyzstan has as much liberty as it doesn't cause any problems or any irritation to major players outside. And as soon as we step on some more serious issues that others have stakes on, I think Kyrgyzstan will have to take a step back. And President Atambayev, of course, has his very special style in speaking, including on foreign policy matters, which does give this air of some greater autonomy and independence. But in the end, when it comes to more serious counting the chicken, as it were, I think Kyrgyzstan has very limited choices. And it's a good thing that so far, the country has been more or less able to juggle between different close allies and to maintain some degree of ability to do things without consulting Moscow. Now, obviously, we have even narrowed down that sometimes by, for example, angering Ankara, thinking on this and that, sometimes not being too nice in our this verbiage for Tashkent or Astana. So Kyrgyzstan the leadership is free, very often behaves very freely, but that usually does come back in a boomerang to the country.
So China is the biggest economic investor, and Turkey is very big investor in the education system.
And of course, Russia owns the gas company. So.
And on that note, we will end. Our allotted time is coming to an end. Venera and Bruce, thank you so much. And Emil, it was very, very kind of you to join us in Bishkek. I'm sorry you had to fight the traffic on the way in.